Harry, if we make an effort today, we might be able to save August.
August? For Christ's sake, tomorrow's the 4th of July, and we will be open for business. It's going to be one of the best summers we've ever had. Now, if you fellas are concerned about the beaches, you do whatever you have to make them safe. But those beaches will be open for this weekend.
Power Records presents...
Welcome to the Power Records Podcast, where the action comes alive. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining me as always is my pal, Chris Franklin. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing swell, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing very well. This is an exciting moment. Of course, tomorrow, for most of you listening to this, if you downloaded the day it comes out, and you should, tomorrow is, of course, the 4th of July, and the 4th of July, to me, means Jaws. If anyone who listens to the Fire and Water, the Film and Water podcast knows that I profiled Jaws a couple days ago, but I never get tired of talking about Jaws, so I thought, why not do another Power Records podcast? We haven't done one in a little while, and we're going to talk about a very obscure record that a lot of Power Records fans are not familiar with. It's called Jaws of the Shark. If you look at the album sleeve, I think you can pretty much figure the title is Jaws of the Shark. But they did that for legal reasons. But before we get to all that, we are going to thank our sponsor, InStock Trades. This episode of the Power Records Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping of orders of $50 or more. Chris, what do you got?
I have got the Art of Neil Adams softcover because Neil Adams provided the cover of this Power Record, like many. It says on InStock Trades, from his Ben Casey newspaper strip to his creepy magazine work to groundbreaking comic books, Neil Adams' work serves as an inspiration for every illustrator who works in the field. Coinciding with the launch of his continuity studio, Adams expanded into cutting-edge advertising work, amusement park ride design, magazine illustrations, animation, and paperback book covers. Included in this collection are classic and rare works spanning the artist's noted career and a unique selection of Neil's seldom-seen paintings. It was $24.95. In-stock trade price is $18.71. You save 25%.
Good deal. Nobody's ever going to get tired looking at Neil Adams' work. So
nope.
Good selection. For me, I tried to search far and wide for something shark-related. There isn't that much Aquaman stuff out there, surprisingly enough. But there is a book called Zoc, X-O-C, Journey of a Great White. And the description is, Zoc explores the ocean's wonders through the eyes of a great white as it treks from the Farallon Islands off the coast of California to the warm waters of Hawaii some 2,300 miles away. Along its journey, the 17-foot shark encounters natural prey and predators, from skittish seals to brazen orcas, as well as man-made impediments that threaten not only the giant fish, but the balance of the ocean's ecology. It's from Oni Press. The writer and artist is Matt Dembicki, and there's another artist, Evan Keeling. It's 120 pages in color. InStock Trades price is $19.99. It's $13.99. That's down from the regular price of $19.99. And you can see the cover, and I really like the cover. It's very striking. So there's just this giant shark and a turtle floating, and then this sort of monochromatic surprint in the background kind of thing. It's really beautiful, and I want to kind of check this out. This looks like a really neat idea for a comic book. So anyone who's a fan of ecology, you might want to check this out. It looks really cool. Again, it's called Zoc, The Journey of a Great White. So for this and all your other trade paperback needs, visit InStockTrades.com, and we thank them for their support. So, yes, as we talked about, this record that we're going to be profiling is called Jaws of the Shark. As Chris mentioned, it features an absolutely gorgeous front sleeve by Neil Adams. And this is really the reason you buy this thing, is for the Neil Adams cover.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is almost one of those, and if you look in the post on the show notes, you'll see it. We're going to post both the front and back covers. This is almost an instance of, like, Neil doing too good of a job, because nothing that you're about to hear is as exciting as Neil's cover. I mean, Neil's cover is so perfect. That shark is so terrifying that I just don't, like, I think the stories they had just can't live up to what Neil is drawing. But that's true in a lot of cases. In a lot of comic books, that was the case. But I don't want to spoil it, but this is not the most exciting Power Record ever produced. Would you agree with that, Chris?
Yeah, and, you know, the cover is basically, you know, it's definitely, not only does it say Jaws of the Shark, but it is a scene straight from the movie, yeah. Where Hooper's in the cage, you know, and Richard Dreyfuss and, you know, the shark's coming at him. I mean, you know, I'm surprised on the back cover he wasn't like, you know, like wrapped up in the cables on top of it, you know, just.
Yeah, they really, Power Records was really skirting some copyright laws here. So there are three stories. We're going to run them all in a row, and then Chris and I are going to come back at the end and comment, because you'll listen to them. They're kind of all similar, so we thought it would be just easier and more interesting for us to comment all at once. The three stories you're going to hear are Jaws of the Shark, Treasure of the Sharks, and The Sacred Killer Shark. And if you look at the sleeve says Worshippers of the Sharks. There is no story called Worshippers of the Sharks. And it makes no mention of The Sacred Killer Shark. And since they both sound pretty similar, I'm sure that they must have changed the name somewhere along the line. And they didn't bother to change the front sleeve, unfortunately. So everybody, listen to these three exciting stories of shark hunting and join Chris and I on the beach.
Jaws of the Shark.
Shark! Shark! See P, come quick! He's killing P!
My granddaughter's screams went through me like a knife. I'd been absorbed in my marine charts, and even as I leaped to my feet and rushed for my cabin, my mind raced to take in the situation. We were aboard the ocean-going cutter Sea Lab off the Hatteras coast on a working vacation for me. The floating research center was mine to captain, courtesy of the Oceanographic Institute, and Pete was my first mate and diving companion. John and Jennifer were along to see the sea and watch me work. Marine biology is fascinating, and I've been delighted to see the kids take a strong interest in my study of sea life in the Gulf Stream, but a shark attack was one thing I pushed out of my mind.
Grandpa, you can see them from here. He's big and there's blood all over.
John was hanging over the rail, all 10-year-old arms and legs. He was pointing to the yards ahead and the deceptively quiet water. I could see the dreadful movement below the surface. Suddenly, Jennifer was beside us, holding back her long hair and trying to hold back the terror in her voice.
Is he eating Pete?
No, Jen, most shark attacks on humans are not fatal. How feeble that sounded, even to me. It was a 20-foot tiger shark, slender and incredibly fast. And he had Pete by the shoulder and was shaking him. I could almost feel those razor teeth tearing at me. Helplessness and terror gave way to rage. John, get me a spear gun. Jennifer, start the engines.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
As I watched, Pete seemed to tear himself loose, thrusting at the shark's snout with his spear gun. I gasped. The shark had torn away Pete's aqualung tank. Pete's wetsuit was torn and flapping, and he was pouring blood into the sea. But there was a space between him and the killer, and there was a chance. Give me the wheel, Jen. John, secure a line.
Yes, sir. What's he doing?
We're going to save Pete.
I eased the boat forward between Pete and the shark, cut the engines, and ran to the rail. Looping the line about me, I prepared to jump.
Your spear gun, Grandpa.
Right. See you in a minute.
He's got Pete. Pull him in, Grandpa.
The shark. He's on the other side boat, coming toward us. Pull on the line, John.
Help, Jen. I can pull them alongside, but they're too heavy to haul aboard.
I had Pete under the arms. His shoulder was badly slashed, and I tried to press against the wound as I kicked for the surface. I held the spear gun poised. The shark could be returning from any direction.
John, the shark is coming under the boat.
Grandpa sees him. He's firing the spear gun.
They hit him. He's swimming away.
Circling, more likely. Pull, Jen.
I couldn't hear the kids, but I knew shooting the shark was a calculated risk. The chances of fatally wounding the brute were slight, and he could react with frenzy. A thrashing shark is a double terror. Even his tail or rasp-like hide can cut you to ribbons. There he was, swinging back. The kids weren't strong enough to pull us up. I braced for the impact.
They're too heavy. The shark will get him this time, sure.
The anchor. Grab the anchor, John, and heave it over. We can and use the power winch to pull them aboard.
We're too late.
Heave it!
The gaping mouth was almost on me when something heavy plunged between the shark and me. The terrible teeth closed on it, and then I saw the heavy anchor rope and grabbed it.
Grandpa's got the anchor rope. Start the winch.
Here they come. Give me your hand, GP.
Gladly. Grab Pete, John. Stretch him out on the deck. Easy, easy.
Right.
Good job, kids. Get the medical kit. Let's cut this wetsuit away and stop this bleeding.
Look, the shark is chewing at the anchor.
I hope he swallows it.
Well, let's forget the shark for the moment, kids. He'll be back tonight in our dreams. I've got this wound packed. Jen, take the wheel again, will you? And head for shore.
Aye, sir.
John, get the Coast Guard on the phone. Pete, can you hear me?
GP, how'd you get me out? Am I...
You're okay. Nasty gash on the shoulder, but I don't think he liked the way you tasted. John's calling for medical help.
Yes, sir. We're with Dr. Popkin aboard the Sea Lab. Yes, sir. I'll tell him.
GP, you know something? I've never been afraid of them before, but I never saw him. When he hit, I turned to jelly.
No, you didn't. You fended him off like a seasoned shark fighter, or you wouldn't be on deck right now.
Grandpa, the Coast Guard officer said he knew you, and that you'd know how to take care of Pete till we get to shore. They'll have an ambulance waiting at the Portstown dock.
I'm going to inject a sedative, Pete. You look all right, believe me. Your air tanks took most of the attack. It's funny, a tiger shark with a taste for tanks.
And anchors, don't forget the anchor.
I know this will sound funny to a scientist, but I'd give anything to get that shark. To hang his jaws over my bunk, it's like I'll always be afraid of the sea if I know he's still out there. Sounds primitive, doesn't it?
We're all primitive deep down, Pete. We have fears we don't know exist until something brings them out, like being struck by lightning. A thunderstorm never seems the same again. If a pair of shark jaws will act as a lightning rod, why not?
Grandpa, we don't have a chance of catching that shark, do we?
Man, ho! Will somebody else take the wheel, please? I don't know how to park.
Coming. Let your question ride, John. The sea is a funny place.
This hospital has a spectacular view of the sea, Pete.
Yeah, if you like the sea.
How's the arm?
I'm beginning to move it. With 53 stitches in it, it's not about to fall off. The doctor says I should be able to dive again, physically.
Pete, come to the window. Look what I've got.
Are those shark jaws he's waving around? What a crazy...
Not crazy. He's a good kid. Good-looking jaws, John.
No, they're not. They're ugly, but they're yours, Pete.
No, thanks.
From your shark, Pete. I'm not making it up. Some fisherman brought a big tiger shark in this morning, and it was carrying a spear from the Sea Lab.
GP, can it be true?
Will somebody fill me in?
I offered to trade a two-studded anchor for this, but they insisted that I take these jaws as a trophy for the man who got away.
Sacred killer shark.
Ship's log, Cutter Sea Lab, December 2nd. Captain Popkin has asked me to fill in the missing days in this log. Maybe he thinks that if I write down everything I remember, it will help me get over the sight of those huge shark teeth inches from my face. We were sailing south, continuing GP's marine life survey, when Hurricane Melissa began to roar.
John, Jennifer, get below and sit tight. This is a bad one. You might try the radio.
What for? Listen to it.
This boat felt really big till just a few minutes ago.
I thought sharks were the worst thing you could find at sea.
Will GP be all right up there?
He has to stay at the wheel. If he doesn't head into the waves, we'll swamp. Why am I telling you? You must know all that. You're 2 years older than I am.
Which means I've already forgotten a lot that you haven't learned yet.
That was our usual way of joking, and we needed something to get through the next few days. The boat heaved and bucked all day and all night. I thought it would fall apart. Then finally, it was quiet. I was sleeping when I heard the engine shut off. John and I rushed on deck. GP was asleep over the wheel. We were safe.
Well, we rode out the storm, but we're not in good shape, kids. We're almost out of gas, the radio is out, the rudder is bent, and I don't know where we are. We'll have to just drift till we get our bearings and hold on to that precious fuel.
I did send out an SOS before the radio went dead, Grandpa.
Good boy. Then there's hope. And plenty of fish in the sea.
We drifted a long time before we spotted land. It was a small island in the distance. We cheered, but too soon.
That's no good. We're going to drift right past. Fire off a signal flare.
I see people on the beach.
Well, let's drop anchor and break out the rubber raft. At the very least, we might get fresh water.
All set. Do we all go, Grandpa?
We can't leave anyone on a crippled boat. Suppose the anchor doesn't hold and it drifts off. We'll take our diving gear and hope the natives are friendly.
That was another joke that turned out to be unfunny. No sooner did we push off in the raft than we were surrounded by sharks. On shore, the people seemed to be greatly excited. So was I.
Paddle smoothly. Don't splash. Sharks are unpredictable. Perhaps they're just curious.
They're circling us, as if they expect something.
To eat?
My paddle! Let go!
Sit tight. Here comes a boat from shore.
Some boat. It's an outrigger canoe. Grandpa, did the storm blow us to the South Pacific?
No way, but there are uncharted islands in South American waters that might have primitive populations, and we might just have found one.
The native boat drew near, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Sharks came from all over, half leaping from the water, and the natives were throwing chunks of meat and fish to them, feeding them. What would happen next? Would the sharks drag all of us into the water? No. The men threw smaller scraps out to sea, and the sharks surged after them like fetching dogs. And then we were being towed to shore.
Grandpa, what kind of sharks are those?
The kind to make a marine biologist retire. I don't know what we've stumbled into, kids, but keep calm and just follow their lead.
Soon we were ashore, surrounded by pointing, laughing natives. They were dressed scantily, as people are everywhere at the beach, but they jabbered in a language I knew I would never understand. I looked at GP.
They're Aborigines. We'll have a hard time communicating.
You'll have all the time in the world to learn how.
We whirled. A bald-bearded man was coming toward us, hand extended.
Harold Smith, friends. Like yourselves, a castaway on this incredible island.
Well, I'm George Popkin, and these are my grandchildren, Jennifer and John. Where are we? What kind of place is this?
A lost world. In some ways, an island paradise. In fact, you might be happy to spend the rest of your days here were it not for...
Not for what? Don't be so mysterious.
Well, the people are friendly and generous. But, you'll see for yourselves anyway. They're shark worshippers.
What?
What do they do?
They feed the brutes to keep them happy. In a way, the sharks protect them by keeping outsiders away. Then I guess in learning to live with the horrible creatures, over the years, these people have adapted their lives to the rhythms of the sharks.
Very poetic, but... What exactly are you saying?
Let's not upset the youngsters. Let us simply say that they have some ceremonies that are not to my liking. And I would give anything to get away from this cursed place.
I was amazed to see the man suddenly so emotional. Then I became aware of a ring of islanders staring at us. They came closer, and they seemed to be looking particularly at me. They smiled, and I was terrified.
Smith, what are they saying?
How can I tell you? It's what I've been dreading for myself. If only you hadn't arrived at the time of the full moon, the time of their sacrifice to the great white shark.
Oh, no! No!
We won't let them take you, Jen.
They'll kill us all, then, and feed us to their sacred monster.
They took our spear guns, but we still have our scuba gear. We'll swim for our ship.
Don't. The islanders will get you. They swim like fish or the sharks.
Gramps?
Easy, honey. We must plan calmly. The first thing to do in a sea of sharks is hang loose and watch carefully. Tell me exactly what'll happen, Smith.
I was numb with shock. Dimly, I could hear the bearded man telling Gramps about the ceremony under the full moon. Drums? A raft of flowers to carry the human sacrifice? Me? I realized I was thinking of GP as Gramps, something I hadn't called him since I was a baby. Then the women were coming for me. I followed Gramps' orders and went with them quietly. They put flowers in my hair. I sat motionless. I kept my mind on Gramps and John and the other man. I knew that as soon as the sun went down, they would be slipping into their scuba gear. The man Smith would be wearing mine. Drums began to beat hypnotically. I could almost feel the great sharks begin to surge through the water. I was in the middle of a raft floating away from shore. Canoes were following, filled with the islanders. They were singing and beating their drums. In the moonlight, I could see fins cutting the water all about me. I was icy cold. I forced my mind to think of three scuba divers swimming silently toward the ship I could see a couple of hundred yards to my left. Surely, all the sharks must be around me. Don't splash, John. You must reach the ship. The drums and chants seemed to be louder. Then they stopped. A giant fin was circling me. A giant shape broke the surface of the water, and I was looking at a cave lined with teeth like icicles. The drums began again, and the huge fin circled, circled. I felt my mind begin to swim in a lazy circle. I could feel nothing. Dimly, I heard an engine come to life. Then I heard the natives screaming, and our ship was coming toward us, veering crazily. Gramps was trying to steer with that bent rudder. The Sea Lab plowed into the outriggers and turned toward my raft, out of control. On the other side of me, the great shark was leaping from the water right at me. He seemed as big as the Sea Lab. I dove for the water. Behind me, the raft shattered as the monstrous shark landed on it. I felt my arm grabbed into a steel grip, and I screamed. Then Gramps was pulling me into a shark-proof cage. He slammed the door just as the raging shark crashed into the bars. The cage was rising out of the water. The shark leaped again. He was being cheated out of his sacrifice. I collapsed into Gramps' arms on deck and didn't see the crazed monster turn on his worshippers.
Mr. Smith, gun the engine and just keep her going till we're out of gas.
Aye, aye, sir.
Look, the sea is all red.
We didn't drift long. Mr. Smith turned out to be a radio man, and we were soon able to call for help. Now we're headed for home. End of vlog.
Done, Jim? How do you feel?
Fine, Gramps.
Boy, were we lucky.
We certainly were.
I mean, we were lucky Jen didn't look too tasty to that sacred shark, so we had time to save her.
I'm going to smash him, GP.
Oh, back to GP. Good. Home we go.
Treasure of the Sharks.
Dear Pete, this was going to be a fun letter, but as you will see, it's just the opposite. We are anchored a few miles off the Bahamas in the Caribbean, where the water is warm and so clear you can see for hundreds of feet. Jen and I have been learning to scuba dive, and we're pretty good. Grandpa has taught us to always dive in pairs, and you can bet we keep an eye out for sharks. Well, we met this local diver, Thomas, who showed us how he went spearfishing without flippers or tanks or anything. He could hold his breath for 4 minutes. We really liked him, and I guess he liked Jennifer and me too, or what happened wouldn't have.
How about coming aboard, kids? Aren't your aqualungs out of breath yet?
Thomas is still at the bottom. How does he do it?
He says he's part fish.
Hey, Thomas, what'd you catch?
Fish for your dinner.
It seems a shame. He's so beautiful.
That is the rule of the sea. Big fish eat little fish. My brother Joseph calls me back to work. He is the businessman in our family. Look how our little fishing boat rocks with impatience in the water. But tomorrow is a surprise. With your permission, Dr. Popkin.
Well, you know how scientists feel about surprises.
I know you love discoveries. I invite you to join me in a search for sunken treasure.
Say yes, Grandpa.
I thought every sunken Spanish galleon had been emptied for 1,000 miles around here.
That's not a very scientific statement, GP.
No diver in the Bahamas will go near this wreck. It is said to be guarded by a phantom killer shark. But I am a doubting Thomas. Tomorrow morning, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, we'll follow you there. Phantom shark, eh?
Thomas climbed into his dory and rowed back to his fishing boat. Jen and I climbed aboard. We were so excited, we couldn't stand still. How could we know what was going to happen?
On deck, sleepyheads. Here comes the sun. And I hear Thomas's boat chugging in the distance. I thought you were too excited to sleep.
I was counting gold doubloons.
I was trying on jewelry.
Ahoy, Dr. Popkin.
We're ready, Joseph.
No need, Dr. Popkin. My brother is dead.
Oh, no.
I wanted you to know I'm taking his body home. The phantom shark is not a phantom.
Wait, Joseph. May I see him?
Joseph pulled his boat alongside ours, and Grandpa leaped onto his deck. Joseph lifted a tarpaulin. Jen and I couldn't see anything, and I wasn't sorry. Jen was crying.
Joseph, these are most peculiar shark wounds.
From a most ferocious shark, Dr. Popkin. My brother was a big child. He left in a dory yesterday afternoon to visit the sunken ship. He wanted to place some treasures aboard so that the children would have something to discover, should there be nothing else aboard. I found his body in the coral reef this morning.
Joseph, will you lead me to the site?
Yes, it is on the way to shore. I will bring back many boats. We will kill the shark.
Grandpa started the engines on the sea lab, and we followed the little fishing boat. Nobody said a word. Grandpa seemed to be deep in thought. After a while, we saw an empty dory, and just past that, Joseph started to circle, pointing. Deep, deep down, we could see a dark shape, the sunken wreck.
There goes Joseph. He can't bear to be here. He didn't even pick up the dory. Let's take a look at it.
A little closer. I've got it hooked. Look, Jen, look what's in it.
The kind of souvenir treasures they sell on the islands. Poor Thomas. He loved a joke.
You mean Thomas got killed for nothing? That he knew there was no treasure down there?
The treasure wasn't that important. The thrill of the search was what counted, and giving you that thrill. There, my wetsuit is on. Hand me those packets, please, John.
This is shark repellent, isn't it, Grandpa?
Yes, but I'm sure Thomas wasn't killed by a shark.
Then what happened? What do you mean?
Well, I'll explain later, after I look around. Now, you two keep a sharp eye for boats. If you see any, drop this yellow dye in the water. Got it?
Grandpa reached for a spear gun. I handed it to him. It felt awfully heavy. Then he went over the side. We could see him swimming toward the wreck.
John, this is scary. I don't think GP should be down there alone. He taught us to dive in pairs, didn't he? I'm going to get into my gear and follow him.
No, Jen, stay here. I think we should be ready to dive if he needs help. But we can see more from up here. Do you see any boats on the horizon? Suddenly, a seaplane was over us. It was the last thing in the world we expected. Everything seemed to go in slow motion. I looked up and right into a pair of evil black eyes. He must have been 100 feet over us, but it felt like his eyes were right in front of me. I felt frozen on the spot.
They're shooting at us! Dive, Jen!
We hit the water together. You could hear funny clunking sounds. They were still shooting at us. We went deep, and Jen released the yellow dye Grandpa gave her. I guess they couldn't see us from the plane because the shooting stopped. Then Grandpa came swimming toward us below the yellow dye. I tried to tell him what was happening by using sign language. It was like playing charades. I spread my arms like wings. I pointed my finger and made shooty movements. Suddenly, Grandpa understood me, and he signaled us to follow him. We swam toward the sunken wreck. We reached the wreck, and he motioned us to hold on to the planking of the hull. The old wooden sailing ship, lying on its side, was half buried in the sand. What fun it would have been to explore it with Thomas. It would have seemed like a real adventure. Suddenly, I realized that we were having a really real adventure right now that I couldn't understand at all. What was happening? What would we do next? I didn't have to wonder long. Two divers in black shiny wetsuits were swimming toward us, fast. Grandpa signaled us to get behind the hull.
but I didn't move fast enough. One diver pointed a spear gun at us. Grandpa grabbed me, and the spear smashed into the planking over my head. The other man carried a long knife. They closed in on us now, like sharks. I couldn't believe how scared I felt. My arms and legs felt paralyzed. Suddenly, a thick, inky cloud was spreading in front of me, blocking the divers from view. And I felt Grandpa tugging at my arm, pulling me upward toward the surface. He had released his packet of shark repellent. The three of us popped to the surface, and I couldn't wait to push back my mask. Grandpa, who are they, and what do they want?
They're Thomas's killers.
Why? Why did they kill him?
For the same reason they want to kill us. They're guarding a secret in that old wreck. You two swim for the boat. They'll be coming through that repellent any second now, and I'll try to hold them off with my spear gun.
Our boat seemed a long way off. The seaplane was floating not far from it. I squinted my eyes. Something was moving along the surface of the water between the boat and the plane, coming toward us. Jen saw it, too.
GP! A fin! A big one!
We can't get back to the boat now.
Swim away from me. I can see the men now, and they see us. I never expected to test this spear gun like this.
But I couldn't swim. Everything was so still. It didn't seem real. All I could hear were some seagulls overhead as I silently watched the men approaching underwater and the huge fin behind them moving with unbelievable speed. Then the fin went down, and through the thinning cloud of repellent, a huge shape came up behind the man with the knife. The horrible mouth grabbed him at the waist and shook him like a toy. It couldn't be real. Not a sound could be heard down there while the shark cut a man right in half. The other man whirled to aim his spear gun. The shark's tail caught him right in the face and sent him spinning to the surface. He felt sick.
I told you kids to swim. Whatever happens to me, swim.
Grandpa dove and aimed his spear gun. A funny-shaped dart went straight into the giant shark, and a bright flash circled him, and he seemed to stiffen. Then he sort of rolled over. It just seemed too easy. Grandpa came up grinning.
That was an experimental electric dart, and wait till I send in my report on that.
Is the shark dead?
Well, he's at least unconscious, and that's good enough. Joseph and his friends will have no trouble rounding up all these phantom sharks, or whatever's left of them. Now, will you swim back to the boat as your captain has ordered you several times?
Not until we hear the secret they were guarding.
They were dope smugglers. This old wreck was their secret warehouse guarded by the story of the phantom shark. The hull is filled with waterproof sacks of narcotics. Now, will you?
It was exciting, Pete, but very sad. Hope you're getting better every day. Your pal, John. P.S. Jennifer sends her love.
I do not. Tell him I send my best regards.
And that was the album known as Jaws of the Shark. Three stories again were Jaws of the Shark, The Sacred Killer Shark, and The Treasure of the Sharks. So, Chris, what did you think of these? And, sub-question, had you heard of this record before, I posted it on the Power Records blog?
I never heard of it before. I didn't know it existed. I never seen it before. So, yeah, it was a total, it was a total surprise to me when I saw it on your Power Records blog several years ago. But I just woke up, so I because of the album. No, I'm just kidding. This is definitely, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this is probably the weakest Power Record offering that we've had on the show yet.
Hmm.
I think the actor playing GP or the grandpa, he's actually, a decent voice actor. He kind of sounds a little bit like Gene Shepard, so it's almost like,
yes! Ralphie. That's who, damn it! I couldn't think of who it sounded like. That's it. Yeah, you and I should talk before we record these things. Yes, that's exactly who it sounds like. That's perfect. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, it's okay. So I'm just imagining, Ralphie's on the C-Lab,
Son of a bitch!
Yeah. He's got his decoder ring trying to figure out something. But yeah, so, I mean, his voice reminded me of that. And there's a ride that Gene Shepard narrates at Disney World. It's the it's the one that's like the great big wonder beautiful tomorrow. He narrates that whole thing, and so it reminded me between A Christmas Story and that, that's what where the voice come out at me at. But the rest of the cast is really, and I don't mean to pick on kids because they're kid actors, but they are not on the first one. They're not bad, but it's like, I don't know if it was like past their nap time or, you know, they were just bored, but man, they just, and it's not just the kids, it's everybody else on the record are just, they're not up to snuff of the usual Power Records, you know, bombast and lots of energy. And, you know, even if it's crazy, everybody's like kind of giving it their all and really, you know, putting themselves out there. I mean, it's just when they're supposed to be scared and excited, you know, it's things like, is he eating Pete? You know, I mean, that's the way they say it. You know, it's like, one, they're talking about eating a guy on a kid's record. And two, the way they say it, it's just kind of like, is he eating Pete?
Yeah, in the third story, when the friend is like, my friend is dead, and they just in tandem go, oh no, they just say it in that flat. Do they not remind you of like little kids in like a Gojira movie that are then dubbed, and they have that just flat way of talking where it's just like, we are going to go hunt for sharks. Oh no, there's a shark eating our boat. Like they're just like completely lifeless. It's a very strange. All of these stories are credited to a group called the Gold Star Repertory Group on the back cover, which leads me to think that this was not produced for Power Records, that this was made by some other organization years ago. And then when Jaws exploded, Power Records probably bought this inventory for like a kid's record or something. Although, like you mentioned, it's got stuff in it that's really not for little kids.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
In Treasure of the Shark, they're talking about there's the bad guys running narcotics, which is like, well, huh? But it feels like this is what Power Records would have done, is that they bought this material from somebody else, they hired Neil to do a new cover, and then the back cover, which is all this diagrams about sharks and stuff, that feels like it's out of like a textbook. So it feels very thrown together to me. That this is, as you said, it's not up to their normal standards. Because Power Records were, if anything, not dull, you know, at all. And these stories are very kind of flat.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you think from the back cover that it might be kind of coming from more of a scientific angle, maybe. But no, I mean, it's, you know, the moral of the first story is, you know, you strike back at nature. You know, you're in their domain and, you know, you get attacked with like, well, I'm going to have his jaws and hang it up. I mean, is this the beginning of Quint? I mean, come on. You know, it's so cool.
We're all primitive deep down, Pete. Okay. Yeah. All right. Fine.
I want to club you in the head right now, Pete. You know?
Yeah. I'd never heard of this record before until I started doing the blog and I started, you know, researching all the Power Records that were out there that I never knew about. And this, I was like, what is this? And, you know, again, you see that cover and you're like, this is going to be killer. You know, this is going to be awesome. And then you listen to it and you're like, wow, what a missed opportunity. Although I will say the second story, The Sacred Killer Shark, about the island where they worship the shark, like that's a neat idea for a horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, like that would make a really good, fun horror movie of like, you know, your average tourist stumbling onto this island where they worship sharks. That's a cool idea. It's not done. You know, these stories are only 8-9 minutes. There's not a lot to be done with them, but that, I'm like, that's a great premise.
Yeah. I mean, that could work. I mean, you could take that plot and make it work for like a Tarzan story or a Phantom story or something like that. I mean, it's a usable, serviceable plot, but it's just, that's probably the best one of the bunch, but it's still the girl's so laid back about the fact that she's getting put out on a raft and sent out as a shark sacrifice. It's like, at what point are you going to get excited, honey? I mean, come on.
I guess they spent a little too much time with their grandfather, which is funny that it's the grandfather. Why is it the grandfather? Like, why isn't it just the father? Like, I don't get what that's supposed to be about.
I think he abducted him. I'm just, that's what.
Maybe he's like an anti-MAME type where the parents are very controlling but they give him up to the grandpa and they go on these great adventures. I mean, there is some, a bit of like, there's that line in The Sacred Killer Shark about the granddaughter's talking about the natives and she's like, they jabbered in a language. I'm like, they didn't jabber in a language. They're speaking a foreign language. You white devil. Come on. I mean, like they're talking their normal language. Like, you know, that's very, very, you know, ethnocentric sort of viewpoint. Like, you're on their island, for Pete's sakes.
It's as sensitive as a Gilligan's Island episode, you know?
Which that would have made a hell of an episode of Gilligan's Island, by the way, if they had shark worshippers coming.
That'd been awesome.
this is like just a kind of a big missed opportunity because the sleeve is just so good. It's so fun, and the stories are just kind of eh. But, you know, when I did post it on the blog the first time, which was back in 2007, there was a bunch of comments from people saying, oh, my God, I had this as a kid, and I loved it. I'm so happy to hear again. So it must have made a bit of a, no pun intended, splash. I'm sure that, you know, it probably sold a couple of units in the wake. Again, I keep making these water puns, of the Jaws success. So I'm sure it probably was a fairly decent hit for them and probably very cost effective too. You just slap it all together. I mean, you know, other than paying Neil to do the cover, the rest of it was probably done, you know, pretty cost effectively.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of interesting too because I knew this existed from your blog, but I was watching the one of the special features on the Jaws Blu-ray, and when they were showing all the different Jaws merchandise in the documentary, this shows up on the screen for like a split second.
Does it really?
Yeah,
wow, I don't remember that. Oh, that's funny. Huh.
Even though it's not official.
No.
I'm surprised Aquaman and the Great White Shark from Mego didn't show up.
See, now how cool would it have been if Power Records had done an Aquaman meets the Jaws of the Shark record?
Oh, my gosh.
That would have been amazing. I would have been my favorite Power record of all time. They could have done that. It would have been super cool.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and I mean, if they... I mean, we did the Star Trek one where essentially Conan's Star Trek. So exactly. Why couldn't they make a Jaws and Aquaman record?
Yeah, that would have been really cool. Yeah, so this is I can't argue for wanting to hunt this down other than once because you can hear all the adventures here on this episode and you can look at the cover. I think that's kind of all you need, really. It just, you know, like I said, it's those kid performances are tough to get through.
Yeah, I will give them points for not completely aping the story of Jaws. I mean, they really didn't. They come up with a set of characters and a scenario that actually could be some kind of, you know, I could see, maybe not as bloody, but I could see this as a like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon in like more like the early 70s when they seemed to have those kind of cartoons where they'd have the kids out on adventures with like the, you know, almost like a Johnny Quest type thing, but a little boring, you know. when they had to cut back on the violence and everything, and they, you know, it just seems like this could be a lost Hanna-Barbera cartoon treatment that got turned into a Power record at some
minus
point.
Minus the mention of narcotics, of course.
Right, and all the blood, and you know, it's like, oh, the water turned red. It's like, wow.
These kids, it's tough to shock kids in the 70s, you know? They lived through a lot. So I don't know what you're going to do.
I guess.
Do we have anything else we want to say about Jaws of the Shark, or have we exhausted this topic?
I think we've pretty much said it all.
I think we've covered it. So, that's Jaws of the Shark. You know, yeah, I would agree with you, Chris. This is probably the least exciting of all the records we've covered, but I felt compelled to talk about it because it was obscure and because it's July 4th and Jaws is here. So when we come back for the next episode, we'll do something much more exciting because, you know, again, it probably won't have a better cover. Again, this cover is probably one of my all-time favorite Power Records covers, but yeah. On the inside, left to be desired. So, so I guess we're going to wrap it up here. If you want to contact the show, of course, you can go to our website, which is thefireandwaterpodcast.com, and leave a comment on the individual show thread or contact us via the contact page. Chris, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me right here on the Fire and Water Podcast Network on the Supermates podcast that I host with my wife, Cindy.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So, again, thanks, everybody. Chris, thanks for coming back and doing another Power Records with me.
Always a pleasure.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. And until the next episode, drop the needle and turn the page.
Come, Robin. Into the Batmobile and home.